Celeb Savant is a career retrospective type interview focusing on singers, actors, and industry experts. Join Barrett Edelstein now as he dives into the entertainment world.
South African producer Wayne FitzJohn is the CEO and co-founder of Talent 10 Holdings. He is an entrepreneur, private equity investor, and venture capitalist with more than 25 years of experience in financial services and related industries. Through his Intiba Pictures, FitzJohn has produced such films as I Am All Girls in 2021 and Redeeming Love in 2022. The video game Super Dragon Punch Force 3, part of the highly successful Boy Kills World franchise, will be released in April of 2024. Among other companies, FitzJohn founded Talent 10 Holdings in 2012, co-founded IoT.NXT in 2015, founded Intiba Pictures in 2017, and founded Talent Digital Art, TDA, in 2020. Global expansion has resulted in the successful establishment of corporate presences in London, Los Angeles, both Johannesburg and Pretoria in South Africa, and The Hague in the Netherlands. FitzJohn has facilitated investment in numerous industries, including technology, finance, industrials, mining, and the media sector. This has resulted in Talent 10 Holdings' market capitalization well exceeding $1 billion. Under his leadership, IoT.NXT has achieved one of the fastest revenue curves in the global Internet of Things industry, as validated by respected independent analysts. South African-born and American-based producer, Simon Swart has more than 30 years of experience developing, selling, distributing, and marketing both movies and television shows. In his studio years at Warner Brothers, Disney, and Fox, Swart worked with some of the greatest filmmakers of all time on everything from big movie franchises to acclaimed independent films. These credits include the Star Wars and X-Men franchises, Avatar, Planet of the Apes, Napoleon Dynamite, Black Swan, and Slumdog Millionaire. More recently, Simon has produced several commercially successful and impactful movies, including I Can Only Imagine, the most successful indie of 2018. Under the Intiba Pictures banner, Simon also produced the hit I Am Girls in 2021 and DJ Caruso's Redeeming Love in 2022. Boy Kills World is a movie directed by Moritz Moore and filmed in Cape Town, South Africa. Boy is a mayhem machine who's been training to assassinate the bloodthirsty Hilda van der Kooi and avenge his family's murder. Guided by his sister's mischievous spirit, Boy undercovers one stunning revelation after another as he barrels toward Hilda. The film's cast includes Bill Skarsgård, Jessica Roth, Famke Janssen, Andrew Koji, Michelle Dockery, Sholto Copley, and many others. Up next on Celeb Savant, speaking about their careers and their latest project, the movie Boy Kills World, are producers Wayne FitzJohn and Simon Swart. Thank you to you both for joining the Celeb Savant podcast today. So are you guys both in Johannesburg?
No, we're in Cape Town, actually.
Cool. Simon, you first. Tell us, at what age did you feel that you want to be in the entertainment production world? And give us a brief overview of your journey in this space.
Well, I grew up in South Africa, and I've been in the States since 1986. And my career in the entertainment business started at Warner Brothers. I was in the international finance department. I always knew I wanted to produce. And then I went from Warner Brothers to work at Disney, and then from Disney on to Fox. And that was kind of my film school. I went through various roles from finance to operations to marketing and sales. And I was the head of distribution at 20th Century Fox for like the last 10 years of my career in the States. Got to work on movies like Avatar, managed the Star Wars brand for 20 years, work on Titanic, Napoleon Dynamite, all those fun little movies, the big movies, small movies, and all that. But ultimately, I wanted to focus on an area that I felt like the studios were ignoring, which is the smaller story-driven movies. That when I was looking at the ultimates and P&Ls of the studio, those were one of the most profitable segments in our portfolio. And to my shock, horror, and pleasant surprise, I guess, I realized the studios were de-emphasizing all of those And if I was going to leave the studios and go out on my own, that was an area I wanted to focus on. And the key there was making movies for the right price, and with the right cast, the right talent, and the right story. And it was right about that time that I met Wayne, who was having some similar inclinations coming from a different background. And Wayne was exploring things with a very similar approach. And our first phone call was about a project that we were looking at doing together. We decided not to do that project, but we had about a four-hour call a few days later where we actually unpacked business models and dreams and goals and aspirations. And Wayne had started Antiba Pictures, I want to say, 6 or 7 months before. And that was the beginning.
Yeah, I have lived in movies since I can remember. I mean, I remember watching, you know, Indiana Jones and the Lost Ark when I was seven. And, you know, you just like lived in these things, but, you know, being raised in the, you know, old Western Transvaal, Northwest Province, film wasn't exactly something you thought of as a career from there, you know. All you thought about is escaping the mind. Anyway, long story short, I got into finance and we built a very successful venture capital business. And my daughter was busy doing her vocational guidance, you know, coming up for matric and career selection. And, you know, I knew what the drill was going to be. We were going to do 500 tests and then they were going to tell you, oh, you can do whatever you want. And so I what I'm talking about. And so I was like, and I didn't really want to participate in the 500 tests because I had to drive up and down to these things. So I just said to, you know, George, follow your dreams, chase your passions. I promise you everything else will fall into place. And so she said to me, but you didn't. And that was like not the response I was expecting. And so I was like, okay, I'll bite. What should I have done? I mean, I'm loving my company. We've got an amazing business. And she goes, yeah, but you would have made movies or music. And so I figured, you know, okay, I can't exactly tell her to do it and, you know, not do it myself. So we formed Antiba Pictures literally the next day. And so we set about writing a script because that's how we roll it in the talent group. And you know, we like to be in the trenches because that's probably the best university on any of the industries we're in. And so we got the I'm All Girls script going and got Donovan Marsh on. And I met Simon about a month before Principal Photography, you know, because I realized like every other product, you can make something special, but if you don't know how to distribute, you're in trouble. And so I set out to go to the States to figure out distribution and our paths crossed and the rest is history.
So you guys have naturally been collaborating since that period. So how many years has that been?
I think we are now approaching our 6-year anniversary in a few months' time. Yeah.
Awesome. So Wayne, what is your role in the company? And Simon, what is yours?
Well, our roles overlap quite a lot. I mean, effectively, we both producers. Mm-hmm. I think Simon would get more in the minutiae of the, you know, particularly in post. And, you know, my role tends to be very much in the, I guess just because of the logistics, you know, cause we generally shoot in South Africa, try and do as much post here and then the rest moves to LA. And practically I'm running a number of businesses here, so I can't be part of that. So Simon gets into the minutiae operationally in post and then, you know, as soon as a product comes out, we both review it. And I mean, there's literally not a decision made that we're not both intimately involved in. We've been very hands-on. It's kind of our mantra. So that's kind of how we do it.
I'd say there's a significant overlap in what we do. One of the biggest differences is Wayne tends to manage all the details on this side. And I manage the details in LA because we have an office in LA as well. And really, I think that's been very important for us is that we kind of have the operations of the company based in Johannesburg, and we have a sort of a front office, if you will, that's in LA. So we keep all our relationships working on both sides, and we're truly a global and international company.
Okay, so you both have different roles within the company, but for the listeners who do not understand or are unsure, what does it mean to be a producer on a film?
Oh my God, this is the monster of all definitions. So you're a fixer, you're a therapist, you're a funder, you're a parent, You are a janitor. You are a plumber. You, no, it's very simple. You've got a very limited budget. You've also got a bigger constraint in access to people. The crew and the cast are only available to you for a very limited time because that's how things work. You know, they've got other projects and other commitments. And so you have to get what you need to get in that time frame. And so effectively, all you're doing is you are scanning the environment the whole time for what can go wrong. And invariably, everything you think can go wrong stays fine and everything else goes wrong. And so you've got to pivot very, very quickly in those moments and solve for really ridiculous things. I mean, we got this guy, I'll give you an example. So we got this guy from Germany. He's some Red Bull champion drone pilot. He built a rig specially for our movie. He knew exactly how, you know, Dave, our action director was going to move and shoot and do everything. They'd been rehearsing in Berlin for months. And so now we get to principal photography. We fly the guy out and we're getting ready to do our first, you know, drone shot action thing. And somebody realizes, but this guy's not licensed to fly his drone in South Africa.
Oy vey, oh my word. Okay.
I promise you, we're like hours away. We're hours away from having to shoot this thing. Hours away. And now you've got to solve for this. So, you know, it involved me potentially going to jail and I had to sign like indemnities and all sorts of shit just to get through that one. But we got through it, you know?
And by the way, that was a chance we were all prepared to take to let Wayne go to jail.
The support I got, the support I got in favor of me putting my, you know, neck out there was amazing, amazing. So,
I never actually knew that you needed a license to fly a drone.
very much I was just astounded that if the Germans are saying this guy can fly, that the South Africans didn't buy that, you
Yes.
know.
But back to your original question, Barrett,
Yeah.
is yeah, what Wayne is saying, the producer, you package the project, you bring the cost, you literally hire everyone, you are responsible for everything. You're the first person in on a project other than the writer usually, and you are the last person touching it all the way through distribution and release, and everything in between is your responsibility.
You are a parent. It's
Yeah.
as a dad, I can tell you the thing that's trained me the best for this is being a parent.
Yeah.
Except, you know, the 18 years it takes to get your kids out of the house, you're condensing that into about 18 months now. Okay. And all the shit that happens in between.
Okay, that's interesting. And now I understand what it means to be a producer. I'm not actually sure if I had a perception before, but you've definitely clarified it for me. You guys have mentioned that you always film in South Africa. Obviously, it's a beautiful country and there's lots to film here. Any other reasons why you choose to do so?
It's not always, it's a strong preference. So
Okay.
when we look at projects, honestly, the value you get, the key to making movies as an indie, you've got to make a movie for the right price and you can't compromise quality. And we've had very good results shooting in South Africa. South Africa, obviously, geographic is incredibly versatile in terms of locations. It can double for almost anywhere in the world. It's very limited in terms of what you can't do in South Africa. If you're doing period American pieces in the 50s or snowstorms and winter intense winter scenes, those might be harder. You can do them in South Africa. They're just going to be harder because with technology now, you can do that. I mean, we created a winter wonderland in the middle of Good Hope Center in Cape Town in the summer.
It was 40 fucking degrees outside. I just wanted to do that. No, but for us, I mean, when we formed Talent Holdings in 2012, one of the fundamentals for the then four shareholders was we need to create industry that inspires young South Africans because I'm not a fan of the brain drain. I'm not a fan of what's going on in our country. But if we don't stop it, and if we don't create the right incentives and the right inspiration, you know, this beautiful place is gonna suffer for it. And, you know, the irony is that so many people are migrating to places like California, not realizing that 100 years ago, the ostracized, the rebels and the rejects went to this desert arid land. Because they were kicked out of mainstream business elsewhere. And so they had to invent, industry. And now we have, from California, we've got so many amazing things, from the tech space to the entertainment space, to the music space, but it was born out of necessity. Yeah. Now we have the necessity here. So let's not go and move and morph into places that have already, matured and are now in decline. Be part of the change that is here. Be part of the inspiration that is here. And we don't realize what we're doing. We don't know who's seeing it. We don't know what they're doing, but just by virtue of being here and getting busy and doing it in spite of, the fact that it could be better and it could be this and the rebates could be faster and whatever the case may be. If we keep doing that, I'm 100% certain that when we look back in 20, 30 years, we're going to become a dominant player, that there are going to be so many new people in so many new areas and create so many new jobs, that we don't have titles for yet, that we can become a thriving nation again. And that's essentially what drives us.
I love that. I mean, I love Johannesburg, South Africa. I'm a big proponent for the country. As you know, I'm based in Johannesburg. I was living overseas for a couple of years and I came back and I thought, no, Joburg's my place. I love it, Joe, and that's that.
But then, we've just done New York and you go there and you're inspired and what have you, but damn it, it's not Joburg,
Oh, absolutely.
I'll take Joburg over New York any day. Central Park is amazing, but we have vast kilometers of wildlife and felt just right there. We don't just have this, little square in the middle of this jungle.
Exactly. That's why they love Central Park, because it's the only nature in the whole planet.
Exactly. We're like so spoilt. Our standard of living is incredible, in spite of all the shit we're dealing with.
Yeah.
We live in truly the most beautiful country, bar none. And the opportunity, I promise you, as hard as it is, it's better here than anywhere else.
I totally agree with you. So now let's dive into the movie Boy Kills World. How did the production come to be? What were the steps to let it happen? Let's unpack the movie.
So we just finished Redeeming Love. We were actually about to release Redeeming Love. I'd been hit by some dude in his car while I was training on my bicycle. And so I just had neck surgery. It was a rough time. It was just I say post COVID, but we were actually in the middle of COVID still. Delta had just hit. It was rough. And so I just literally had neck surgery on the Friday. And the first time I connected with the team was on the Wednesday. And we had this long, depressed meeting, as I'm sure everyone was having at the time, because we were all still working from our homes. And Judd and Marley and Simon were busy, at the end, just like as we were wrapping, they were ruining the fact that here's this beautiful project. I hadn't heard about it, given the fact that I'd been out of circulation. But I was like, why is it not for us? And they were like, well, we did Redeeming Love. And now, this is on the other end of the spectrum. And I was like, but why is that a reason we shouldn't do it? And so Judd was like, do we do R-rated violence? I'm like, will people watch it? And they go, absolutely. I was like, then we do R-rated violence. And so they told me there was a short video, which is the one that's, done its rounds on YouTube, that Moritz and Dave made. And so they showed that to me, and I'm not going to lie, I didn't know it at the time, but my blood pressure was like super low. And so I watched it and I literally wanted to puke, but I was like, we have to make this. And then, Simon was tasked with getting it back to Sam and Roy. And I mean, that was quite an accolade in itself that Sam and Roy and their teams approached us. Please understand, this is Sam Raimi and Roy Lee. They approached us to go, we want you guys to make our movie. So that was also great for us because, if we were able to do this, we immediately stepped into another league of filmmaker, because we were working with these guys and we've held our own. I'm very proud of what we've done, but Simon went and worked his magic in LA. We got the rights and we immediately pivoted. I mean, it was going to be shot in Thailand and we immediately pivoted and said, hang on, we're redirecting this to Cape Town. And so we had to fly Moritz out and, do location scouts. Do you want to tell the funny story? I'm going to tell the funny
story. There's a lot of funny stories.
You know which one I want to tell.
Well, the funniest for me is that they go, we're going to Thailand because we need the jungles in Thailand. And so like, no, we can do jungles in South Africa. We have those too. And And he was absolutely disbelieving. He was quite sure we'd be shooting this in Thailand. So we ended up shooting in the suburbs around Constantia for our jungles.
High society Cape Town, Thai jungle. I promise. I promise. So, but my favorite story, and I'm probably going to get in trouble for it, oh, but, boy. You know, so we had somebody else cast. I won't mention names. Oh. Please don't write names. Okay.
Okay.
And she's like hot property right now, you know, right up there. The heat's high. And so we had to do a very hardcore pay or play contract, you know, which whether we made the film or not, we were going to pay her. And so we landed that. We did it. We had to like, you know, to cast, we had to just agree to all of these terms. Anyway, so we were happy. I mean, it was an exciting prospect. So we're about 2 months away from principal photography. We're in Cape Town doing the location scouts with Moritz. And this person's manager phones us and basically said something along the lines of, it's mayhem in South Africa. People are dying in the streets because of Omicron. Okay. Created this new variant and it's worse than anything before. And we're all going to die. And there's no way he can send, his client to South Africa. So there's just no way. And we're like, but it's a pay or play. I mean, you have to come. No, there's just no way. There's no way.
Now the irony is at this point in time,
we're sundown.
We're done with our day of scouting and we're sitting at Camps Bay watching the sunset.
And we're like, people are dying in the streets? Way, you know?
The media creates a narrative of what things are like. And I was speaking to an artist a couple of weeks ago and they had a layover in Johannesburg and they were told they're not allowed to go out the hotel room because it's very dangerous and they'll be killed and all sorts of things. And I was like, really? Next time you come to Johannesburg, let me know and I'll be your bodyguard.
Honestly, Barrett, our cast that have come down here and our international crews where we brought them down here all leave as huge fans and proponents of South Africa. Yes. There's something magical happens. They're all posting on their socials how amazing it is here, what a wonderful time they've had. This restaurant, that restaurant. Yeah. And
do you know what my default? I mean, look, Cape Town resembles much of what they've aspired to be.
Yes.
You know, aspire to achieve. But when we take them to Joburg, you know, you can see the nerves because they've heard, like you, they've heard all these stories. Do you know what my default first stop is for the international, you know, visitors?
Yeah.
You've got to hit Neighbor Goods right away in the city center and you got to feel the heart of the people. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it changes everything. Bill, I love this guy so much. He became such a fan of South Africa. That he would frequent the Shabins in the various townships around Cape Town. He got his driver to take him in. Mm-hmm. He was taking some of our I'm a piano artists and connecting them with Swedish artists so we can create like this new retro mix. Yeah. And I mean, the guy loved South Africa so much. It was a wonderful encounter.
My view of the movie was that it's a reflection of the world, of society, of what's happening in the world, of all the leaders that are out there.
Sadly. I'm so glad you saw that. You saw that.
Yes, absolutely.
It's a satire commentary on what's going on in the world today.
And that there's also no sort of like complete evil or completely goodness in people. There's stories underneath that drive them to allow those different things to happen. So they sort of appear as sort of gray in the sense that they're not purely good or evil in the societal label of what that is. So for the listening audience, I would definitely go see this movie. I highly recommend it. It's a brilliant reflection of society and where the world is today. And the twists at the end, I love the twists and turns of how the story ends. I'm not giving anything away. You'll have to go see it for yourself. So Wayne, as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
Go see it in a theater.
Hey, Wayne.
I'm not Wayne, but I'd say go see it in a theater because it's a shared experience. And it's a movie that doesn't take itself too seriously, but laughing with other people and going ooh and ah with other people adds a dimension to the movie that you won't get at home. And that was Simon's response. You can have Wayne now.
Okay. Mine is a little bit more purposeful in terms of, let me tell you, if you don't support movies like this, here's the alternative universe talking about fascism. you're going to have five or six studios that are essentially going to be telling you what to watch. Okay. And that what to watch will lead to whatever propaganda programming they're going to lead, and you're going to have their agenda so they can make as much money off of you. We are doing this very much to fight for the artists, fight for the original stories. That's what this industry was built on. The fact that there's so many reruns of, you know, reinventions of movies that did well in the 80s right now just tells you how desperately lacking new creative and new origins are. And if without your support, without, you know, the public recognizing that the little guys are still fighting for, you know, a form of freedom of speech and freedom of expression here, it's going to be very, very hard for us to keep going. So please, please support our movie.
Yeah, I think we're at a time right now where we're all witnessing the commoditization of film. And it's really the indies that are railing against that.
Sholto Copley is a South African actor, producer, and director. His love for improvisation and characterization led him to create and appear in numerous stage plays throughout his school career. He studied speech and drama at Trinity College in London, and after a number of years in the business world in South Africa, he then shifted his focus to work in creative endeavors for commercials, music videos, and short films. Sholto took the next step in his career when he produced the short Alive in Joburg for director Neil Blomkamp. Up next saw Sholto return to his acting roots and take the lead in District 9, of which he improvised all of his dialogue in the film. District 9 premiered at Comic-Con in 2009 and became a surprise hit, grossing more than $211 million worldwide. Sholto went on to play Murdoch in The A-Team, then next starred opposite Matt Damon and Jodie Foster in Elysium. Sholto went on to star in the following movies: Old Boy, Maleficent, Chappie, Hardcore Henry, The Hollers, Free Fire, Gringo, The Last Days of American Crime, Beast and Monkey Man. He also made appearances in the television series of Curb Your Enthusiasm and Russian Doll. I'll be speaking to Sholto about his journey in the entertainment world, and specifically about his character in the movie Boy Kills World, Glenn van der Kooi. Up next on Slepsvant, we've got Sholto Copley. So Sholto, we're going to do a quick overview about your world in entertainment and then dive or go into the actual film. At what age did you decide, cool, you, whether as a child or teenager, that you want to pursue this field or this journey in the acting world? And how did that sort of proceed to where we are today? So your hybrid journey in the entertainment and acting world.
I guess I realized that I could go, that there was a profession of film, I guess, that it was clear to me that I could enter it or sort of pursue it when I was 11. We went to Universal Studios in Hollywood with my family. We were on a trip there in 1985. I'd started making little movies on a Betamax camera, Betamovie camera, it was called back in the day. And before that, just for fun, because I just was intrigued by it, I guess. And then I realized at 11, I realized, okay, this is actually something you do. And then I wanted to be an actor till I was about 16. And then I totally abandoned that. I was like, it's too much like entering a lottery. And I then moved to doing things behind the scenes. I was one of the founders of ETV television channel here in South Africa. Started directing, producing, writing, and then ended up acting years later at 36 by sort of happy accident for District 9.
Okay, so what do you enjoy about acting?
My favorite part of acting, I suppose, is if I get to do improv acting, which is very much just flow of consciousness stuff almost. It's just get yourself out the way and let a character sort of come through you. There's a playfulness, though, to the art generally, to any part of acting that I enjoy. It's play. You're sort of playing for a living.
Are you only focused on acting now, or are you doing those other elements of behind the scenes as well?
I'm going back behind very strongly. I'm writing quite a few projects that I've now written. I'm producing and directing and acting and trying to get a few things financed. Everything that I want to do is very different and edgy. So it's harder than normal, but I there's a couple of very special projects that I'm trying to get done and very close on some of them. So we'll see.
So where are you based?
In Los Angeles, I suppose you could say, but we're so nomadic in the business, but yeah, my main house is in LA.
So are you in LA now or in South Africa?
No, I'm in Cape Town now promoting Boy Kills.
Yeah, yeah.
I love coming to South Africa. I mean, I still have a holiday house here and I come back as much as I can.
Let's dive into the movie Boy Kills World. How did that come to be that you were part of this production?
So I knew about the project through my agents and I had an early meeting, a Skype call with Simon Swartz, South African born producer who lives in the United States and has lived there for the last 25 years. And he told me that I think my agents told me that it was a South African funded movie, which at this budget level, I thought I just basically didn't believe it. I was like, well, that South African companies don't put, millions and millions of dollars into movies. Like it's never happened.
Yeah.
The media companies don't, the television stations don't. These guys at Antiba Pictures did, and I was massively intrigued by that. It's a massive step forward for South African industry.
Tell us about your character.
So I play a guy called Glenn van der Kooi, or van der Kooi, if you South African version of him. And he is the face and mouthpiece of this sort of ridiculous family. He's kind of, I suppose, a little bit like a politician, really.
When I was watching the movie, I was watching your character and I was looking at him and I was like, oh, he's so shiny and clean and polished. And yet I felt him slimy and dirty at the same time.
Yes.
Like they had this veneer of like nail polish veneer, the shiny veneer. But when you got a little bit underneath that, it was just like this, I don't know what to even call it, but it was just gave me the skin crawls in South Africa, like we call it the chills. So give me the chills. Yes, watching him. And he wrote like that part. I'm not giving much away. I'm not for the listeners. There's a section after a certain section and he starts throwing sweets into the crowd. I remember when there was a certain politician who was in power and he was some other country that had a natural disaster and he was throwing things at the people there who came to collect. And it just reminded me of that whole, that shiny veneer of what a politician is. But when you dig down deep, it's just all corruption and crime and sort of negativity, so to speak. Did you approach it with that in mind? Or did just that happen as you were going through it?
Not really. This is not a complex role. It's not, I do a lot of different characters. I find it easy generally to slip in and out of certain types of characters. And this one was very easy. It's just to sort of play someone who's a little bit obnoxious. And, there's a lot of that in my world. So there's a lot to draw on. And, who's always smiling and acting like he cares about everybody and doesn't. So, it was easy. And it's a fun movie. It's not a heavy, complex role or complex dramatic role. I like playing characters that are entertaining and fun and will be this guy, I was like, I can definitely just kind of feel a way to do him.
When did you guys actually film this? How long ago?
Filming. So last year before last.
So 2022.
Yeah, I think so. That sounds
okay. Right. You obviously filmed here in South Africa before, but what was it like filming in Cape Town with the local and international audience cast? I mean, obviously, a lot of some of the international cast, they were new to South Africa and they were experiencing it for the first time. So what was it like bridging being part of that movie? Filming, yeah, but then understanding that you were sort of the gateway to a bunch of overseas people who had never been here before.
Strangely, or perhaps not strangely, just South African production, the amount of films that are shot here has been, and TV shows since District 9 has been quite extreme. I've ended up shooting in Cape Town multiple times, and none of them had to do with the fact that we were trying to make a South African project outside of Chappie and District 9.
Yeah.
It was just coincidental that they were shooting here. So I've ended up
shooting
in Cape Town many times and I jump at the chance to do it. I love the crews here. I love the attitude of our crews. I think we have it's my favorite crews of anywhere to work in the world that I've worked. So it's really a no brainer for me to come and shoot here and get a chance to to come home.
So when you're in the acting space and you wearing that hat, having been a director and producer and stuff before, is it a challenge for you to say, okay, now I'm just acting and I need to take direction and production from others? Or does it feel like sometimes like you're like, oh, should we rather do this? Or do you just understand, okay, this is a hat I'm wearing in this space?
Yeah. I mean, over the course of my career, I think in the early stages, it was more frustrating when you were doing something. If you were in a situation and you felt like you could do it better, you know, you could do that version of the job better. And of course, you don't know if you were right or wrong, but you can have that feeling. It was more frustrating for me then. But the entire time, I guess, because I've been on the other side of the camera, I know that you don't want to be the difficult actor that's arguing with the director. Like, somebody has to carry the can at the end of the day. And directors are usually very strongly opinionated. They have strong views, but they also, you know, they're going to be sitting with you at the end of the movie to watch how the audience reacts. So, you know, it's kind of in their interest if you're saying, listen, I've done a bunch of movies, I think this is going to be a problem. They can listen or not listen, you know, and the good guys generally tend to listen and debate or take seriously what you say. But I can definitely wear the different hats. I definitely accept that at the end of the day, if a director needs me to walk this way around the table and hold this spoon in this hand, I'm going to do because otherwise it's going to make it difficult for everybody. You do have to separate the hands.
For the listeners, tell us why you believe they should go see the movie Boy Kills World. What will inspire them? What will they get out of it?
I think if you like action movies, this is a movie where the main guy seeking revenge, as you've seen 100 million times, is a deaf mute and has given himself an inner voice from a video game character. It's a totally refreshing take on the genre. So if you're a fan of this type of movie, of action films, go see it, because there's nothing really like it. It's similar enough to things that you have seen before it can be enjoyable, but it's unique and refreshingly different enough that it feels like a fresh experience at the movies.
I totally agree with you. So for me, I love the ending, not giving anything away. And it also reflects a society that no person is either black or white or good or evil. There's shades of gray amongst everyone. And it just to sort of understand that, because you understand that at the end, there's this element of, okay, was that person doing it for the right or wrong? Or it's just, I found that part fascinating.
Yes, that is kind of missing from some stuff nowadays, where I think Hollywood, you know, in the 20s and 30s and 40s, it was like there's good people and bad people. And then they kind of started going, actually, you know, people are more complicated than that. And now almost with a certain level of political correctness in Hollywood, you're going back to like, no, if you said this line, you must be a bad person. Or like even in real life, you know, they tweeted this, therefore they must be like hateful, racist, xenophobic assholes. You know,
and now we must cancel them.
Yes, exactly. You're kind of like, well, I don't know. I thought we just got to the stage where we worked out that we're very complicated monkeys, you know, so maybe we need to keep unpacking some of the complications rather than like just stamping everybody one way or the other.
Exactly. Sholto, as a final message to the listening audience, what would you like to say?
What would I like to say? Hello, listening audience. Hope you're having a good day. Hope you seize the day, as Robin Williams said in Dead Poets Society. Seize the day, boys and girls, and anything in between. Make your lives extraordinary. That's what I would say.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Celeb Savant. Please follow Barrett on TikTok, Instagram, YouTube, and Facebook at Celeb Savant. That's CelebSavant.